and James in power. Just what type of training have you been doing? When I asked that, I suddenly remembered Tsubaki's legend. Although she had been training for 10 years, she had dozens of avatars focusing wholeheartedly on training individual classes for that duration. For Tsubaki, reaching level 400 or even 500 was entirely possible when she spent 10 years of intense focus. I made a promise to my keeper that I would become stronger, Tsubaki said earnestly. Whether you give me 10 years or 100, I will fulfill this promise to the best of my abilities. Such is my wish and my obligation. I nodded my head slowly. This has to do with the new energy you obtained from your time as a keeper, right? Dana wouldn't tell me what you got, but the fact that you could grow this strong... Tsubaki simply smiled. That is correct, my keeper. I intend to use this contractual obligation to assist my keeper to the best of my abilities. So that's the name of it. I let out a small sigh, walking over and gently pulling Tsubaki to her feet. Just don't overdo it. It'll all be for waste if you end up hurt because of your training, right? Tsubaki paused before nodding her head, her tail swaying behind her. I will do as you say, my keeper. I gave another nod, looking Tsubaki over again. How did you manage to obtain a saint body? Were you able to do the energies out of order, after all? Tsubaki's eyes twitched for a moment, and she cleared her throat. Hard work and determination. Though she said that, I could tell that she was tightly controlling her thoughts, as if not wanting me to hear something from her. My brow arched, and I lightly flicked her forehead, causing her eyes to widen as she brought both hands up to cover her forehead, looking aggrieved at me. If it's bad enough that you're purposely masking your thoughts, that tells me all I need to know. After I said that, I reached up and gently stroked through Tsubaki's hair, causing her tails to stiffen. Really, I don't want to find out that you hurt yourself for my sake, okay? I understand, my keeper. Tsubaki nodded her head softly. On to a different subject. I saw that vote you inspired. I smirked, Tsubaki's head shooting up to look at me in interest. You did. Did it pass? She seemed excited to hear the results of the vote, but I simply shrugged. I don't know yet. Apparently the votes go from the top down, so we've got to wait for the rest of the keepers to vote. We'll find out the results in a couple days, I assume. If it doesn't pass, you can try to be the one to put it on the market as a purchasable system. When I was in the activity, the system priced that at 50,000 points. My eyes widened at that before I let out a sigh. I doubt I'd be the one to get to it first, but we'll see what happens. I don't expect that the vote will fail to begin with. After all, there's not really a downside to passing it. The only ones who would say no are those who have no interest in letting companions govern their territory to begin with. Tsubaki hesitated before nodding her head. I agree. Looking back, I obtained a lot of points by relying on the royalties from this system. Even if I consider that only those who could afford it had the chance to purchase, that was a large portion of keepers. I know I would if I saw it on the market, I admitted with a grin. Anyways, what is this other energy you have? I understand World Sight and your contract one, but I don't recognize the third. That is an energy that I obtained from James, Tsubaki admitted readily. It relies on the strength of karma to enhance attacks. I believe that I have accumulated quite a lot of karma, so it should be especially useful in my hands. I gave a small nod of agreement. So you went for a trinity again. Was there any special effect that happened when you did? Tsubaki hesitated before shaking her head. I have not noticed any particular benefit to possessing multiple energies in a saint body, no. Furthermore, they did not destabilize as the numbers increased, like domains did. If you had asked, I would have taught you my key of beginning, I told her with a grin, to which Tsubaki shook her head. I have enough understanding of that energy, my keeper. Although I considered it as an option, I wanted to pair energies with my respective domains. Your key of beginning, while powerful, does not particularly fit any of my domains." My eyes widened slightly when I heard her words. Is she aiming for the path of an origin? To become an origin, the highest level of power that I was aware of, one had to master an equal number of divine domains, fallen domains, and saint bodies. Currently, Tsubaki has fulfilled two of the three conditions. If she managed to obtain three fallen domains without her body collapsing, she could very easily become a true origin, unlike the pseudo-origin created by Terra's incarnations. I just couldn't tell if Tsubaki was purposely aiming for the origin, or if she wanted to keep the Trinities for its symbolism. Either way, I was certain that she would eventually seek out Chelsea and Terra to look for methods of training void powers that wouldn't cause her to collapse. However, that was likely to be quite a ways in the future before it came to fruition. After all, there was a reason that the origin was something that should only begin appearing near the end of the fifth rank. Speaking of which, Dana herself was also two-thirds of the way to the origin. She was a fallen goddess who had a saint body. If she became a true goddess as well, she would be able to take that step. As for Lyphra, well, Lyphra doesn't seem interested in that. I could more easily imagine her trying to go for nine divine domains, seeing it as a personal challenge that she had to overcome. The fact that two of the servants of Olympus were so close to achieving the rank of origin certainly filled me with hope for the upcoming invasion. "Is something the matter, my keeper?" Tsubaki asked, staring up at me in confusion. "I have grown accustomed to hearing the thoughts of others. Now that I look at you making such a face and cannot understand your thoughts, it is mildly frustrating." I gave a light laugh when I heard her words, seeing her cheeks puffed out indignantly. I was admiring how much more powerful everyone is than I had imagined. "It makes me proud to be your keeper." Tsubaki's eyes widened, her cheeks going slightly flushed from the praise, while her tails began to wave so fast that they actually kicked up a breeze behind her. Chapter 7. After I was done catching up with Tsubaki, Dana informed us that she was going to head off to work on one of her projects. Now that we were back, she was passing the baton back to Tsubaki, so to speak. "By the way, where is Lyphra?" I asked, glancing around. I had expected Lyphra to appear at some point during the 10-year skip, but she never showed up in the admin room. Tsubaki blinked before shaking her head. "Currently, Lyphra is advancing through the floors of Fior. In the last 10 years, she has managed to dive an additional 2 floors, helping to establish base camps on each one. According to her last report, she found something akin to a boss monster on the 57th floor, and was updating all of her equipment in an effort to challenge it." "That is incredibly reckless. Still, Lyphra's not one to bite off more than she can chew, at least not without an escape plan." I nodded with a long sigh. "Is there any news on the divine gem mines from the 55th floor?" Tsubaki thought about that for a moment before responding. "The divine gems are now public knowledge. However, they are considered an extreme luxury good due to their rarity and the price to create them through the digital conversion system. So far, a total of 500 gems have been found all throughout the floor. Many of them have been stolen from their original discoverer, and only a select few were purchased via normal channels." I couldn't help but raise a brow at that. I thought that most of the bigger criminals had gone into hiding ever since Olympus appeared. "That is true for most worlds. However, they still maintain a level of activity in Fior. Besides, the item is simply too tempting a target. I personally interrogated one god who had stolen the divine gem. There are many that believe that if they surpass the number of domains possessed by the Greater Pantheon, they will no longer be controlled by them. Thus, the gem is a tempting target for those who have already obtained 3 domains. I let out a low groan at that, shaking my head. Breaking the Trinity by adding a fourth domain won't necessarily make one stronger. It would only give them additional options. Originally, it would weaken their divinity by making it unstable, but the discovery of divine circuits fixed that problem. Still, the fact remained that more domains did not mean more power. The only way to strictly get more power as a god was either through the accumulation of divinity via the acknowledgement of the people, or by creating more powerful divine abilities, which use that energy. As for accumulating acknowledgement, it would be incredibly difficult for anyone to do so more quickly than the greater pantheon. The only other thing that I can think of asking is, have Gerard and Rian made any progress on their magic research? I glanced over at Tsubaki to ask, who gave a small shrug of her shoulders. Yes and no. According to my information, they have successfully created a fifth-tier spell. However, the quality of the spell was worse than many fourth-tier spells that are available. Thus, I hesitate to call it a success. I could understand why she made that distinction. After that, Tsubaki directed one of her avatars to begin preparing a meal for the two of us. While I was waiting, the door of the study opened, and Aurevi walked through with a wide grin.
Hey, boss! Ash said you asked about the game, so figured you'd be expecting my visit.
I gave a small chuckle, nodding my head. I thought you'd be dropping by soon. Did you bring the seed? Oh, did I? Aurevi said with a laugh, extending her hand to my desk to deposit not one, but two small silver tokens. I arched a brow, glancing up at Aurevi before looking back down at the tokens. The first of the two had the image of a pool of water on the face, while the other a tall tree.
I thought you'd like to take a look at both, so I went ahead and delivered.
My eyes widened at the realization of what she brought to me. How recent was the last withering? I asked, Aurevi simply chuckling.
I had Julia accelerate it, so it was just last week. Typically, one tree can last 3 years, but we cut this last one short so that I could have a more recent seed for you. It has all of our latest mutations and adjustments.
I nodded my head at her words, focusing on the two seeds.
Magic seed. Still mirror. Ability. Reads the user's mana to recreate their intentions via manipulating reflections. Can be absorbed by the body for more convenient use. Magic seed. Withered tree. Keeper branch. Ability. Records the mutations of the mother tree registered to the keeper branch group, allowing the user of the seed to use those abilities for themselves. Recorded ability. Internal mana production. Recorded ability. Internal key production. Recorded ability. Natural energy attunement. Recorded ability. Elemental seed detection. Recorded ability. Elemental seed mimicry. Recorded ability. Elemental seed production. Recorded ability. Natural energy reinforcement.
There was a long list of abilities recorded in the seed, many of which were auxiliary abilities such as pet inventory or things of that nature. The tree had been through almost 3 full cycles of accumulating abilities, so it was only natural that they had conducted a lot of research. Though, I was a bit disappointed that the individual seeds were not recorded within the withered seed. Are the saved seeds wiped every time you make a new tree? I asked, to which Aurevi nodded her head in confirmation.
That's right. I learned my lesson on that the first time, so I've started having the tree produce a copy of every type of seed it has saved whenever we were preparing for a new cycle.
I'd hope so, I chuckled, holding up the withered tree token. Is it possible to change seeds in the future? For instance, if you discover more abilities to research with the tree and bring another one out later? Aurevi grinned at that.
That's right. Think of it like purging an energy core. I've already tested it myself.
When I heard that, I focused, the withered tree token sinking into my hand. In that case, can I ask you to provide a copy of the different seeds you have in your collection? I didn't expect that I would be using most of them, but rather, I wanted to keep it as an option and a potential way to reward people in the future. Aurevi gave a quick salute before reaching into her pocket and pulling out a small bag.
I thought you'd probably ask for that. If you absorb one token, you'll be able to replicate its effects. In order to produce them yourself, you have to absorb 3 of the same seed. I took the pouch with a nod before my eye twitched. It felt empty. Though there was also a prompt in the corner of my view which expanded my inventory. Off to the side, I now had a container inventory, which was filled with dozens of different types of tokens. I didn't realize that the inventory system had been expanded. Huh? Oh, yeah, that's not a proper system thing. Basically, some craftsmen a few years ago found a trick to adjust the metadata of an item that they create, tagging it as an inventory object. The created object then only has the basic 50 inventory slots, but money can be spent to enhance it. That's convenient. I nodded my head, beginning to extract 3 of each token from the pouch to absorb, as well as 2 still mirror tokens. Can it be applied to any object? Aurevie shook her head to deny that question. Afraid not. Part of the trick is that the item has to be created with the sole purpose of being a container. If the crafter's intent during any part of the process is for the item to be used as a weapon or any other purpose, the inventory tag won't stick. That's why it's mostly bags or boxes, but some people have managed to follow the steps with jewelry, since it doesn't have a defined purpose to begin with. I gave a small nod of acknowledgement. Still, it's a nice trick. As I processed the tokens she had given me, I saw that Aurevie had a small, playful smile on her face, looking at me almost expectantly. I know that look. There's something that I haven't noticed. Oh, there definitely is, she confirmed in a playful tone, though wouldn't tell me what it was. I paused my processing of the tokens, furrowing my brow and sweeping my world sight throughout my body. For the most part, everything looked normal, until I found the energy core that represented the withered tree token that I had just absorbed. What felt like mutated mana was circulating towards that core, which is about what I expected. After all, I was absorbing those tokens for that purpose. What I did not expect, however, was that the core was releasing pure ki and mana in thin wisps. Were radiating from the core, naturally joining my normal energy flow. When I sensed that, my eyes opened wide, looking at Aurevie. I thought that just meant that the tree could... Aurevie snickered, shaking her head. It's a mutation, so it applies to the token as well. A few people have discovered that hack, so trees that can produce ki and mana are being purposely cultivated and withered, their seeds sold in the real world. Your maximum energy won't be increased, but it provides a low level of passive recovery. For someone with dietary needs equivalent to the 10th ring or lower, this can handle their daily needs, making it so that they did not need to recover energy by eating or sleeping. They do still need to eat for nutrients, but not to recover their energy. However, for low-level martial spirits and other energy bodies, this can completely remove their need to consume food. That was honestly more than I was hoping to get out of this seed. Granted, my own needs were near the 46th ring, so this token only provided for a fraction of what I required. I closed my eyes again, focusing. Something like this wouldn't just create the energy out of nothing, so I needed to figure out where the mana and ki came from. As my world sight swept over the core again, I noticed that it was actually natural energy that was continuously pouring into the core. Afterwards, it was converted to mana and ki through a complex network of energy lines. Is it possible to draw in more natural energy to increase the recovery rate? Yes and no. Aurevie shook her head. If you want just one burst of recovery, you can do that. However, doing so fries the energy circuits, and it will take time to repair. If you do too much damage like that, the passive recovery may be entirely lost. And before you ask, we can't increase the recovery rate of the base seed either. Actually, this is as fast as the research can get without some insanely rare elemental seeds. Like, we're talking about being born in the heart of a collapsing star, or upon the death of a black hole. For the tree, this current recovery amount is more than enough. It's so little for you because our bodies are small. However, when you put that ability in the body of a massive tree, the daily production of ki and mana is roughly 700,000 points each. My eyes briefly widened at that. 700,000 was roughly double my current mana and ki, meaning that the total energy of the tree would more than make up for my energy needs. Unfortunately, the seed only produced a smaller sample. I'll need to go through the full list of abilities in the future and see if there are any more surprises in store. Chapter 8. After I finished absorbing the tokens, I took my time exploring the list of abilities one by one, looking to see if there was anything that truly stood out to me. Honestly, there was nothing that would revolutionize my fighting style or increase my strength by a large amount. I had wanted the Still Mirror Seed just because it matched my style, but even then didn't think I'd use it too much. As for the other abilities of the seed, there was the power to create portals, survival in a vacuum, and other things like that. Most of the abilities were things that would only be useful to me as a monster tamer, a class that I hadn't focused much on since Fafnir. The abilities that I obtained that would be the most powerful were natural energy attunement and natural energy reinforcement. With these two enhancements, my talent as a druid or a shaman had increased drastically. However, that was all there was. Those two abilities alone were not enough for me to consider changing my fighting style. "You sure you don't want our help with this one?" Petra asked, looking at the nearby slime girl as they stood at the base of a giant mountain. "It'd be tough with just one person, right?" Lyphra snickered, checking over her equipment. "That's the whole point! If it's not a challenge, it's not a trial! The fact that it's a trial is what makes it worth doing!" Lyphra had been spending quite a bit of time in Fragments of Acidia with her virtual self lately, getting all of her equipment upgraded to divine artifacts. The opponent she planned to face this time was the strongest monster of the 57th floor of Fior. In fact, by Lyphra's guess, it had most likely broken the limits of the floor, either being born as an anomaly or having arrived from a hidden ore, like the old Tidestones. Lyphra couldn't be sure either way, and didn't have the ability to properly measure its level, only relying on the energy it radiated from a distance. Just to be safe, she didn't plan to open her library to call upon any of her antagonists for this. Most of the ones that could appear were either too weak or too demanding to be useful for the fight at hand. That was why Petra offered the help of herself and Thelsa. However, Lyphra refused without a second thought.
"You just watch. After this, we'll head back and get a drink."
As she said that, she began walking towards the mountain. In truth, she didn't even know what the monster she sought looked like, only that it was powerful and living within the mountain. Thus, as she approached, she began to activate her divine circuits.
"Begin the epic."
Lyphra's body began to glow as her divine powers were activated at full force, blessing her as the hero of a new adventure. Lyphra couldn't tell right away what the effect of the blessing was, as it enhanced neither her strength nor her speed.
Is it a luck enhancement?
Down below the mountain, Petra looked around before speaking up.
"This isn't going to be one of those cases where the entire mountain is just part of the monster's body, right?"
Sara snickered, shaking her head.
"We haven't seen one of those since the 50th floor. Still, if it's something like that, I'm sure she has a big attack that can deal some damage. Personally, I'd be more worried if it was something small."
Thelsa furrowed her brow, seemingly lost in thought.
"It feels familiar, somehow. But I can't remember where I've felt this before."
Lyphra continued to climb, zeroing in on the source of the energy she felt. It was mostly a powerful natural energy, but there was a mix of spiritual energy and mana within, clearly showing that it was more than just a natural treasure. The higher Lyphra climbed, the more distinct the energy became. Lyphra didn't use her world sight, not wanting to trigger any kind of response from the enemy. More importantly, she wanted to keep its identity as a surprise. Thus, she waited until the feeling of the energy was at its peak before drawing her sword.
And here we go!
Her arms swelled as she forced her key into it, slashing at the mountain with enough force that it left a crack more than 100 meters deep. At first, there was no reaction, leading Lyfra to think that she might not have cut deep enough into the mountain. Just as she was pulling back for a second swing, the side of the mountain shattered, a massive hand stretching out from the crack to grab Lyfra's entire body. The hand was dark green, with bony spines along the palm and wrist. Lyfra's eyes went wide, trying to jump back out of the way, only to find the arm extending further and further until she was unable to escape the monster's grip.
"Let go of me!" Lyfra shouted, a blade of ki forming in the air and slashing down, empowered by her martial intent.
Lyfra's blade intent was an ever-changing strike, until Tsubaki's intent to sever. Lyfra allowed her to strike from any angle at any time, though it lacked the enhanced damaging effect of Tsubaki's. Still, the keyblade slashed down at the monster's wrist, forcing it to release her. At the same time, more of the mountain crumbled, revealing a massive humanoid over a kilometer tall. Its eyes were a bright green, vicious spines covering its limbs. Still, Lyfra couldn't shake the feeling that she had sensed something like this before. Until she felt its energy scanning over her, an energy only detectable thanks to her own world sight.
"James!" she called out in shock. "Whoa! There's another one of him here?"
Lyfra knew very well that James came from Fior. However, based on his level, there should have been more than 5 more floors before they encountered his people. Like James, this must have been another one that left the home layer through some special methods, and just wound up on the 57th layer. As for why he was embedded in a mountain, Lyfra could only assume that he was in hibernation, having created the mountain around his body in order to sleep. While she was thinking that, the cut on the giant's wrist healed, and it sent a hateful glare towards Lyfra. The temperature in the surrounding air skyrocketed, the sky turning red. The falling stones melted into magma, splashing down against the mountain. Then, as the giant raised his hand, a torrent of magma shot out from the mountain to grab Lyfra. Originally, Lyfra would just shrug off an attack like this. What was normal molten rock going to do to a god? However, the fact that this was the same type of creature as James made her cautious. She was just jumping up to avoid when her head smacked against something solid, causing her to gasp in shock. "He's strong enough with natural energy that he can isolate space." Lyfra braced herself, having lost her chance to defend against the molten rock. It crashed directly into her, smashing her against another solid wall of space directly behind her. Lyfra's voice cried out from the intense heat that seemed to burn directly at her soul. Once the torrent ended, she began to fall from the sky, her health bar flashing dangerously above her head.
"I'm not done yet. You want to fight with natural energy? I'll fight fire with fire."
Lyfra forced the words out from her burnt throat, stabilizing herself in the air. Her divine artifact armor had been reduced to slag, her sword a useless heap. She clapped her hands together, focusing. Her spirit began to surge, green lights flowing through the air to converge on her body.
"I am the embodiment of nature's wrath," she shouted as loud as she could, her figure growing larger and more illusory.
She grew to more than 100 meters in size, still not even reaching the knees of the opponent. However, her skin was like the wind, her hair was fire, and her eyes were pure darkness. When she spoke, her voice echoed throughout the sky.
"I haven't had to use this in a while."
She stretched her hand out towards the giant, as if matching his own previous movements.
"Wrath of wind!"
The giant's eyes went wide as a loud crash echoed through the landscape, one of his arms having fallen from his body. He growled, the arm dissipating into energy that rose back to reattach itself as his other arm came up. Towering spears of earth shot from the ground, piercing through Lyfra's body. Unfortunately, Lyfra was in an elemental state, causing the spears to do little damage.
Wrath of flame, she spoke, a white flame wrapping around the dissipated energy before it could reattach. Immediately the giant jumped back, a look of worry on its face for the first time.
Lifra was not just wielding natural energy, but every attack was also imbued with spiritual power, much like its own powers. The problem for the giant was that Lifra's powers seemed far more refined than its own. While he struggled to grow back a new arm, Lifra was calmly walking forward.
I've always wondered what would happen if I combined these two. You can help me experiment, she spoke, her voice carried along the breeze.
The void as my blade, the sky as my shield, and light as my armor.
The world seemed to twist at Lifra's words, a torrent of wind flowing along her left arm, forming a circular shield as light condensed on her body as armor. Although she did not appear to be holding anything, something seemed to carve into the ground from her right hand with every step she took. The giant gathered his energy, forming a blade of fire that flew towards Lifra. She held up her shield of wind, charging forward with thunderous steps. When the blade hit her shield, it forced her feet to slide backwards, before she dug into the ground. Then, with powerful, trembling movements, she began to push forward. The giant's eyes widened again. He tried to shift the blade into a ring to wrap around her shield and attack Lifra from the side. Unfortunately, he found that there was a layer of wind wrapped around the entire blade, preventing it from altering its shape. The most that it could do was focus on empowering the blade to push her forward, or else it had to give up the attack entirely to try something different. Its brows knit tightly together on its forehead, putting as much strength as it could into the fire blade. Gradually, it felt like Lifra was being pushed back again, her feet digging trenches in the ground.
Wrath of darkness, she muttered,
her shadow stretching out beneath her feet to connect to the giant's. Immediately the giant lost control of its energy, the blade of fire dissipating while Lifra charged forward unhindered.
This is for making me waste my time preparing for the raid, Lifra called out when she was directly in front of the giant, sweeping her arm upwards.
It could feel its body being split in half, narrowly moving its core out of the way in time.
Wrath of flame!
Down below, Petra watched with wide eyes as the elemental Lifra incinerated the massive monster, a shrill scream filling the air. Lifra let out a long sigh, her body shrinking back to normal size so that she could focus on recovering from her burns. While she healed, Petra ran over.
Can you teach me how to do that? She asked, eyes practically sparkling.
She was a rather powerful druid herself, so seeing this in person sparked her desire to learn.
Huh? Oh, sure,
Lifra grinned, before blinking as a window appeared in front of her.
Huh, another legend. Sweet. Probably a druid and warrior one this time.
Another one? Thelsa's eyes twitched, looking down at Lifra.
Well, yeah,
Lifra chuckled, wincing as the pain from the burns crept up on her.
I'm the hero, right? It's not unusual to leave behind a bunch of legends.
As she said that, her health bar began to shrink dangerously, causing Thelsa and the others to gasp in shock.
Ah, it was a health blessing,
Lifra muttered, suddenly feeling lightheaded before falling backwards, arms and legs spread out. Petra pursed her lips, looking at the sliver of health that she had been left with. Chapter 9. While I was going through the various different seeds that Aurevi had brought me, I was at the same time familiarizing myself with the changes that had occurred within the world. For instance, Aurevi's presentation of the withered tree token alerted me that this thing would very likely change the way the lower-level forces of the world functioned. Thus, I checked the market to look up their prices. There were already people that had online businesses set up to purchase ready-made withered tree seeds. These seeds were protected under the same copyright system that had been previously introduced with the last update. This meant that it was impossible for someone to simply buy the seed and then mass-produce it to sell for themselves.
As for the price of the seed, it depended on the abilities stored within. A seed that only had the ability to convert natural energy into ki and mana could be purchased for the price of a used car or a half-decent weapon. If the seed is capable of producing other elemental seeds on its own, it's more expensive than even a large house in the elven capital. These seeds didn't sell particularly well, partly because the investment didn't just end at buying the seed. Rather, they had to buy multiple copies of every seed that they wanted to reproduce. Although it could eventually lead to them making a profit on their investment, it was too high of an initial cost. However, there was a rather positive effect that had arisen due to fragments of Acidia. Because of the world's interest in the Sylvans increasing, there were several golden Sylvans that often visited popular cities to do trade on behalf of their respective groves. There had even been a new grove that was set up within the border of Hanby. Finally, I learned about the machine empire that arose within fragments of Acidia. Looking back, I couldn't help but sigh at the realization that Dana's familiar had been involved in something like that. Well, at least they had access to quite a bit of high-end technology, some of which seemed to have been used to modify Olympus itself.
"Is there anything else that I can get for you, my keeper?" Tsubaki asked, standing next to my desk with her hands folded in front of herself.
"No, thank you," I smiled at her. "Let me know when Lifra is back. Given her personality, I'm sure she'd love to report on all of her adventures. In the meantime, I think I should get back to training." Lifra let out a long groan as she opened her pale blue eyes, blinking at the sky above.
"Wow, I needed that," she said, before abruptly sitting up and looking around. "They didn't run off and leave me here, right?"
Hearing the small pout in her tone, Petra rose up from a nearby shadow, smiling at Lifra.
"Not at all. I had to go and check up on the Shadow Guilds."
"The Shadow what-nows?" Lifra blinked, causing Petra to chuckle.
"It's a special type of space that Thelsa set up to catch criminals around the time that Olympus was created. We've been running it all this time, making sure to let it rest long enough that the majority of criminals see it as something necessary, as they believe that it helps them avoid the gazes of the Greater Pantheon."
"That's silly. They're silly," Lifra retorted, shaking her head quickly. "Those guys can see everything. If they don't see something, it's just because there was something more interesting elsewhere."
Petra shrugged her shoulders. "Of course, I realize that, as does Thelsa. However, the vast majority don't have this awareness, and the fact that the Shadow Guilds have been left unchecked for so long is evidence to them that they are free to do whatever they want in those spaces. By now, I can't guarantee that we have every criminal in our net, but most organized crime passes through the Shadow Guilds. Most organizations will have their more sensitive tasks taken care of there."
"I see."
Lifra tilted her head, as though she didn't really get it.
"Well, when do you plan to close the net, then? You can't just leave it like that forever, right?"
Petra offered a small smile. "We're in the process of finalizing this now. We want the Shadow Guilds to be a reusable trap, though it might take some time before they're activated again. For now, we've made the arrangements. Would you like to watch from the sidelines?"
Lifra pursed her lips before shaking her head in refusal.
"Nah, let's practice the natural martial arts instead. You said that you wanted to learn it, right?"
Petra's eyes went wide, immediately putting aside the topic of the Shadow Guilds as she sat next to Lifra.
"Are you ready to begin?" Thelsa asked, crossing her arms as she looked at the male figure before her, his eyes dark, almost completely hollow. His body had a lanky build, draped in a black robe. "You'll need to change your identity again after we do this."
The lanky figure cackled, shaking his head.
"That's nothing new. I was born for this sort of dirty work, wasn't I?"
Thelsa hesitated before offering a small nod.
"That's right. Though I hope that after this I can give you a better role for a while. I'll preserve your soul and memories."
"Nonsense, Thelsa."
The figure smirked, its empty gaze directed at the Saint of Shadows. "If I do not carry this stigma, who will?
You? Sora? Maybe Petra?
Oh, I bet Maria would love the challenge. Best to let my hands be the bloodied ones, and let all of you operate in peace. Thelsa gave a slight sigh. All right. I'll continue to employ you as the cleaner. For now, have you memorized the list?
Naturally. I know who can and cannot be touched. Just make sure to temporarily block the gates for me, and this will be over soon. Have you decided who it is that will be killing me this time? Thelsa's eyes narrowed, but she couldn't provide an answer right away.
By the time you're done, it should alert the local guards. You'll just have to do your part.
The man chuckled. I thought I might die to someone special. Oh well, as always next time.
As he said that, his body faded into the darkness. His first destination was the largest and most populated shadow guild, often used as a medium for trafficking. When he arrived, his voice spread out through the area.
Such ripe karma. I shall have to help myself.
The men and women walking the dark streets looked up at that voice, startled. It wasn't often that someone made trouble for the Shadow Guilds, as they had their own gods employed. However, this was the first time that someone had managed to get in with the intent of seemingly destroying the entire place. Some stood by, as if preparing to watch a good show. Others began to make their way towards the nearby buildings to hide or gather their assets. Regardless, it was only a moment before a burst of flame erupted in the sky, one of the guardians of the Shadow Guild appearing. She had a dark expression on her face as she looked around, seeking the source of the voice.
If you want to make trouble, come out. I'll be sure to scorch your soul.
My, my, such a fickle temper, the voice said,
manifesting as a dark figure that hovered in the air behind her. Don't you know that you'll never find love with such a personality?
Though, I don't think you'll need to worry about that anymore. My shadows have covered this place long enough. Now, I'm simply taking back what's mine. The flaming goddess turned, her body igniting as she began to charge over in a rage.
However, before she could reach him, her body began to fall, her flames mixed with darkness.
What's happening?
She called out in shock, feeling her energy going out of control.
Allow me to introduce myself, the man snickered, watching the goddess fall. I am Boreal Grandire, the god of darkness and poison. I've had my eyes on this place for a while. Now that so much karma has appeared, it is only right for me to harvest. And you, my dear, your hands have taken so many innocent lives. It would be rude of me not to send you off to accompany them. But don't worry, he laughed, his arms spreading wide as darkness enveloped the world of inverted light. You shall not suffer this journey alone.
On the streets, the faces of those who had planned to watch a good show distorted. With pale complexions, they turned to flee, only to fall flat a few moments later with hollow eyes. The man's voice boomed out across the Shadow Guild as more and more criminals fell.
With such rich karma, I will surely receive a heavenly blessing. There is nothing quite like cleaning up filth.
Once his power had spread and he killed those from his list in this space, his body distorted in darkness. This scene was repeated again and again, dozens of Shadow Guilds falling in the span of an hour. With each one, every vicious criminal was slaughtered, leaving only the abducted victims, and those with less heinous crimes to tell the tale. Boreal counted off the spaces he had yet to visit, pleased with his progress. There were only three left, and they were among the smallest shadow guilds that Thelsa had established. His body raced through the shadows, appearing within the next space, only to blink in surprise. A total of 5 gods awaited him upon his arrival. Of the 5, one seemed to have a power to prevent his concealment, forcing him to reveal himself ahead of schedule. As he tried to spread his dark poison, another of the 5 countered him with a healing power, taking the form of a black pulse of energy. Boreal let out a laugh as he realized what was happening.
I see. I see. The 5 shadows. Interesting.
Boreal's laugh echoed maniacally. Each of these gods cultivated a power related to darkness, specializing in upholding the rules of the Shadow Guilds. However, I want to see if you are as strong as they say. His body launched forward, towards the man leading the group of five. His hands turned into outstretched claws, though the man only watched him with a calm, calculating gaze. "Halt," he muttered, a black ripple spreading out from his body. When this ripple wrapped around Boreal, his body froze in midair, his expression one of excitement and twisted malice. His consciousness had been frozen, as had his body. "You all know what to do," he said, the other four not hesitating to launch their own attacks on the paused deity. There was little suspense in the fight after this. Boreal, unable to move, or even think for that matter, as his body was crushed under their combined power. Thelsa watched in concern as she condensed a new shadow, recreating the memories and soul of the god that she had just sent to his death. He would need to begin his training from nothing, but he was still able to retain his identity. To her surprise, Boreal's first action upon regaining consciousness was to laugh, holding his stomach. "And here I thought that you wouldn't have prepared anything special for me. The five shadows! Such a nasty little trick of yours, Thelsa," he said in a teasing tone, causing Thelsa to dip her head slightly in shame. "I couldn't have you aware of it too early, or the performance wouldn't have been convincing. Just like you, they have their roles to play." "Oh, I understand," Boreal smiled joyfully. "The Shadow Guilds are a trap. I clean out the trap when it's full, and the five shadows kill me to refresh the bait and let people believe that the guilds are safe. I'll be needing a new appearance and set of domains this time before we activate the traps again." Thelsa let out a sigh of relief, glad that Boreal was so accepting of this plan. "Of course. You may take whatever form or domains you wish to train. It will likely be a while before we are ready to use this plan again." Chapter 10. When Lifra eventually reported back to me and told me the identity of the boss monster of the 57th floor, I couldn't help feeling surprised. This was the second time that we had encountered a creature of James's race. Given the fact that it was buried so deeply in the mountain, it had likely been hibernating for centuries, if not longer. Thankfully, none of them made it to a lower floor, or else they would be able to destroy most of the cities on that floor. I had no doubt that Lifra was the weakest of the servants of Olympus, aside from, perhaps, Gerard. I had never seen Gerard fight to see his capabilities in full. Even so, Lifra would undoubtedly be stronger than most gods out there, having received the acknowledgement of most of my people. Just by virtue of being a servant of Olympus, her status skyrocketed. After listening to Lifra's report, I resumed my training, deep within the vacuum of space. For 2 weeks I did nothing but punch out at asteroids, unleashing my martial will in an attempt to crush everything in front of me. Thus, I finally managed to achieve my martial intent for my fist, awakening the crushing intent. With that out of the way, I told everyone my plans to fast-forward the world again. To my surprise, this time Tsubaki did not suggest staying behind. Perhaps she felt that she had prepared as much as she could, but she joined me in the admin room. As I returned to the admin room, I found a rather surprising prompt waiting for me. "The vote has passed with a final score of 6-1. The update to the companion account system shall take effect immediately. Congratulations, you have earned an achievement. For causing a successful vote and changing the system, you have earned the Innovator Achievement, Preview Perk, 500 points. The vote passing wasn't something for me to be surprised about. The fact that it credited me with the achievement and gave me a special perk, on the other hand, I gestured for Tsubaki and the others to wait for me as I walked to my room, finding Terra lounging on the bed, hugging an oversized pillow. When she saw me, she gave a small smile. "You want an explanation of the perk, I assume?" she asked, to which I nodded my head. "It's nothing big. Basically, if you activate the perk, you can spend 5% of a system's cost on the market to try it in advance for one standard day. So, for instance, if you wanted to use it on a 200-point party system, you would spend 10 points and unlock the party system on a world for one day. I felt somewhat disappointed with this perk, nodding my head. The fact that it allowed me to try a system early wasn't particularly bad, but it also wasn't all that helpful either. At most, I would be able to determine if there would be any conflicts of laws from the introduction of a new system, but in doing so, I would have to cause said conflicts. "I don't think that's a perk that I will be using," I said, with a shake of my head. Terra, however, simply chuckled. "There is certainly one extremely practical use for it, if it is done properly." To that I couldn't help but raise an eyebrow. "No, you can't use it to get information from the system, and then just copy that information. Systems only. However, if you know of a system that can protect you during an invasion, you can cheaply get it right before the invasion begins, and have it for the first day of the invasion." My eyes widened at her suggestion, before a pensive look appeared on my face. If I previewed a system that would allow me to mass-produce fallen gods, what would happen to them after the time period ended? Terra easily saw through my plan, shaking her head. "Anything reliant on the power of the previewed system would disappear after the system was removed. In the case of deities or the fallen without another domain, this means that the source of their existence would vanish. If they had undergone the three steps of perfection, they would be able to save themselves, but they would be crippled. Otherwise, they would simply die." "Okay, not doing that then," I shook my head, grimacing. I couldn't think of a system to preview that would save me from Ragnarokr's invasion. I doubt the system would be so kind as to offer a system to protect my worlds from void incursions. Instead, it would need to be a technology which I wasn't able to use for the preview. With a long groan, I checked the logs to see if I had missed anything else. I hadn't been back to the admin room for a couple of weeks now, so I was surprised to see that I had sold more than 50 copies of World Seed. It looked like the advertisement from Sarah and the others had shown some results. Thinking it over, I set up official companion accounts for everyone to oversee their own worlds and deposited their previous balances in them. As for Ashley, I made a small adjustment to her account to give her half of the royalties from World Seed. That could be used to work on future games. Speaking of which, I just had a thought. I looked over at Terra, who blinked in curiosity. If Sarah broke through to the fifth rank, that means that she can completely code her own worlds. Then, how much would a game she makes cost if she produced everything in-house without spending any points on the market? "Ah, that," Terra chuckled, shaking her head. "Now that she's hit that point, the system will calculate the price of the world based on the level it is at. So, if she made an unranked world like Vision Expanse again, it would probably be cheaper than when she first released the game. The stronger the world is on its own, the higher value it will have in the system." That made sense, and it was something to look forward to when we hit that point as well. Still, that did get me thinking, and I opened up the market to search for void defense technology. Normally, I would focus on letting my world develop this technology themselves. However, given the situation, I thought that I should at least look at the technology on the market. My brow twitched when I saw the price. Over 500,000 points for comprehensive void defense. Okay, so maybe I won't be buying that. Even with all of the royalties we had saved up, that was a considerable expense. If I had enough, I'd consider getting it, but right now, that wasn't particularly an option. With a small sigh, I set the world to fast forward again, this time until the successful creation of the Void Core Generator. I wasn't sure how long it would take to get everything set up for that. but it seemed like a good benchmark to stop and see how things were developing. It was not an easy feat to get the Void Core operational. Each time they failed, they completely lost the facilities they were using, which cost a massive sum of resources. Just the mana gem alone required dozens of mages to fully invest in it. What was worse was something that they discovered after their third failure. Every world that they connected to had slightly different laws, which impacted how the Void Core operated. For instance, if there was a slight adjustment to the way mana functioned, the core exploded either upon construction or activation. To solve this, they had to isolate the core from the outside world's laws, overriding it with the laws of Earth. Only once the entire facility was operating under these physical and supernatural laws could they begin the construction of the more sensitive components. Like this, they conducted the activation experiment 15 times, each time having to tweak various settings before they lost the realm that they had tested in. Only on the 16th try did they manage to create a stable mana generation world without causing visible damage to the world it was hosted in. Seeing hope, they let that generator continue to operate under Chelsea's supervision from the admin room and created 10 more for 10 different generators on 10 different worlds, each with slightly adjusted settings to try and find the optimal configuration. Afterwards, they allowed these 11 generators to produce mana for 1 year each. After the original was finished with its 1 year of service, the mana generated was measured, and a team was sent to inspect the durability of its world barrier. To their dismay, they found that it had been weakened significantly, enough so that it was likely to collapse if a void beast struck at the wrong spot. Thankfully, the world had not yet been destroyed, so they were able to transplant the void core to a new world and modify its settings before trying again. Afterwards, one by one, the other experiments concluded. Some of them caused cracks to form in the world barrier over time, and others softened it, like the first. Of them, two showed no substantial change to the world barrier, and one even managed to increase the durability of the world barrier. When James discovered this phenomenon, he was shocked, going over the information on this experiment to understand the cause. A portion of the mana produced by this generator was redirected to maintain the world's barrier, leading to a long-term improvement. Seeing potential for a possible exploit, he established 5 of these modified void cores in a single realm, letting them run in tandem. The results could be measured in real time from the void, where the barrier became thicker and thicker by the day. Unfortunately, this also caused the mana obtained by the generators to drop drastically. Then, over 6 months after the 5 generators were activated, the universe that they had been placed in collapsed in on itself. From James's initial findings, the world barrier had become too dense, triggering an adverse reaction. However, this gave him hope for another potential exploit. This time, he arranged 4 void cores on a world. 2 of them were the strengthening cores, while 2 were normal. His goal was for the facilities to balance one another out. In the end, he found that there was no change to the density of the world barrier, but it did sharply reduce its durability, making it incredibly fragile after several months. With a reluctant sigh, James gave up on the idea of using the void core to strengthen the barrier, and began focusing more on the 2 versions that showed no substantial changes. These 2 had been allowed to run for roughly 2 years at this point, and the barrier had yet to show any sign of damage. With one last attempt to increase productivity, James moved both of these facilities to the same world, hoping that their minimal impact on the barrier would not cause any harm, even when stacked. Unsurprisingly, his hopes were dashed when the world collapsed after another 2 months. It did not appear to be possible to maintain multiple void cores in the same realm without adverse effects. "That doesn't make sense, though," James thought to himself in frustration. "Tsubaki and Dana created hundreds of these with their method." James began to review the differences between the 2 methods of construction aside from one being based in technology and the other in magic. Primarily, James created a stable connection to preset coordinates, while the old method merely created a physical manifestation of the world locally. Would we be able to get better results if we changed our method to producing physical manifestations like that? He wondered to himself. Doing so would require far more void shielding, as they would have to set up an automatic construction array. Worse, the worlds had the potential to grow over time, so they weren't able to be placed close together within the void. That was the ultimate downfall of Tsubaki's method, as the worlds had grown into one another so much that they were beginning to destabilize. The only way to prevent the world from growing was by fully utilizing the excess mana it produced. But he was well aware of how much power that was. Once it reached a certain size, they would find it difficult to channel the energy out all at once. In the long run, Tsubaki and Dana's method would produce more energy, but also far more substantial risks. My method is more stable, even if the output is lower. If I can't make up the amount by building additional generators in one world, maybe I can create the generators in independent worlds. When that thought occurred to him, James recalled the old remnants from a past invasion, in which the invaders crafted multiple bases within the void. Those bases still existed to this day, though most of them had been handed to larger guilds and corporations. James himself only had access to two of these bases. I can use those for now and set up an automatic delivery service. If I can talk Dale into getting a system or tech that will let me make more of these spaces, maybe I will be able to safely mass-produce energy. James had already cast aside the idea of making the void core directly in any occupied world, as damage to the world barrier would cause irreversible harm to that world. Chapter 11. Considering the time it took to construct each void core and find a suitable world to test it on, it took roughly 12 years before the official launch of the void core power plants. For this initial launch, each universe was assigned one core that would be held in a different realm to supply power to them on a grand scale. James sat at his desk, not even wanting to calculate how many lives were ultimately lost in the research and development. Every failure meant the construction of an entire universe, after all. Theoretically, it would be an infinite number of lives. However, they did their best to mitigate this as much as they could. For instance, making sure that the solar system that they appeared in was uninhabited, and that there were no signs of interstellar civilization. There was no way that this would absolve him of all of the deaths, which was why James was personally the one that ordered the construction and activation of every void core. He could imagine just how black his karma must be at this moment. For that reason, he shut himself off from everyone, giving them no explanations or requests. If someone helped another person with overwhelmingly bad karma, that person too would gain negative karma. He knew that just a fraction of his current karma would be enough to condemn his entire research group to an eternity of torture within the black chains that rested beneath the Golden Palace. "I can't go out until I resolve this problem," he thought to himself. Though such a deep karma was not something that would go away on its own, unless he brought just as much good as the evil he had done, he would be forever tainted. If karma can be wielded, it can be molded, it can be removed. It's just a matter of determining how. James was familiar with the One Light energy, having been the one to bring it into this world in the first place. He was the first to learn how to weaponize karma. Now, what he needed was to find a way to sever his karma, to wipe the slate clean. Until that time came, he would not interact with anyone. Even Chelsea was forbidden from talking to him, unless she sent him a message directly from the admin room, where even karma couldn't reach. James glanced at the title that he had received before he made this decision, Purest Black. For having the most powerful negative karma, his luck stat was reduced by a full 3,000 points. Even the Keeper himself wouldn't be able to sustain such a debuff. And so James quickly found his luck stat more than 2,000 points negative. Together with Charm, the luck stat was one of the two great mystery stats of the system. Charm would subtly alter your mannerisms to come across more pleasingly and generally increase your social skills. Meanwhile, luck influenced things even deeper. In a way, it was even tied to the fate system. Luck, fate, and karma. Now that would be a terrifying trinity of domains, James chuckled to himself as he thought of that, before shaking his head.
Yo, Terra, I know you're listening and waiting for me to ask. Can the origin of fate clear my karma? Sure enough, Terra's voice came back a few moments later with a solemn tone.
I'm afraid not. If she were a true origin, it wouldn't be difficult. However, the process that she used to reach this point made it impossible for her to build up her origin power to the degree she would need to clear that level of karma. As the judge, Irena would have some authority to lower your karma, but not enough to help you.
So, either I create the energy to wipe karma myself, or I wait for Dale to buy a system that would do it in some way, James said with a low groan.
Someone in Ashley's team is working on a system for one to redeem negative karma through true devotion to the greater pantheon, but it requires an offering. When he heard that, James's brow twitched. An offering to remove this much karma? I'd have to drain the vaults of every country in every world. You're not wrong, Terra chuckled dryly. But are you really sure that you can create an energy to manipulate karma?
Why not? A savage grin appeared over James's face. I've created energies that can weaponize karma. I've created energies that view the weave of fate itself. Now I just need to combine the two and add some new features.
With your current luck?
There was an almost awkward tone to Terra's mental voice as she asked that. James's face tightened up, unable to offer a response. With his current luck stat, the weave of fate would be actively working against him, attempting to prevent any action which may benefit him.
I'll just need to overcome fate, then.
Terra let out a light laugh when she heard that response.
I'll try very hard not to take that as a personal challenge, for your sake. Remember, don't try to take the easy way out. Even if you manage to preserve your soul after death, the karma will remain with you. It will probably take a long time, but you have to persevere.
James gave a firm nod of his head. As soon as he left the lab and flew to the deepest regions of space, he was prepared for that. It could take months, years even, to construct this energy, especially when fate was actively working against him. Already he had encountered 5 monster gods, eluding those he could while defeating the others. Now that the void core was complete, it was time to descend once again. With energy being far more readily available, there would soon be a technological boom. Hopefully, with every major institute focused on void defense, that would influence the direction of development. When I descended, I made my way to the Ashtanu Research Institute, the door opening to let me directly in before I had the chance to knock. I had come with the intention of personally congratulating everyone on this project that had been decades in the making, only to find a flurry of activity. Chelsea, Thea, Nora, Tracia, everyone was running back and forth in a panic, fixing machines that were constantly breaking down. Is everything all right? I asked, Chelsea pausing at the sound of my voice.
How did you get in here?
She shouted in alarm, a loud crack coming from one of the perfection chambers.
Gah! Tracia, this one's yours.
You didn't let me in? I blinked. The door opened as soon as I got close.
Oh, no. That means that the automatic security is down, too.
She sighed heavily, focusing as her divinity grew. A burst of golden light spread out, and she nodded her head.
Okay, that issue has been fixed. Now, what are you here for?
I hesitated to speak up, seeing the chaos of the lab. Is this a bad time?
It's going to be like this for a while, Chelsea grumbled under her breath. Anything connected to James is suffering karmic backlash. Udana said it was some law written by a Murphy in your world. My eyes widened at that. Is it that bad? However, Chelsea simply nodded her head, not elaborating. Okay, what can we do to fix it?
Right now, nothing.
If there is any potential fault in a device, it will flare up. It doesn't matter if the fault is hardware or software. Until it has lost its karmic connection with James, it will keep breaking.
What about all of you? I asked, looking around at the others.
The fact that we have our own karma insulates us to a degree from the retroactive effect. Unless we actively do something that would benefit James in some way, our own karma is safe. Now, as I said, what are you here for?
I came to congratulate everyone on their hard work, I said, my voice somewhat strained. I had certainly not expected circumstances like this. Chelsea rolled her eyes, not saying anything. However, I heard her voice in the back of my mind.
You want to thank us? Find a way to get rid of the karma. I can't even suggest helping James with my incarnation, or else she'll have to join him in isolation. While I personally wouldn't be opposed to that, it's not what he wants.